Okay, Tom, welcome back to another ongoing series of Shiurim on Daf Yomi. We are now on Ktubot Daf Yod Tet Amud Bet, in the middle of a discussion about Shtarot. The truth is we ended about two lines early from where it would have been a good place to stop. But in any case, we'll pick up at Itmar, about five, six lines down. Itmar, Sefer She'eno Mugeh. We're in the previous discussion, we were talking about documents that a person should not keep around the house, a Shtar Mona. We talked about a Shtar Pasim. Shtar Parua. One other piece is Sefer She'eno Mugeh, a Sefer Torah that has not been checked to make sure that it's kosher. Amar Rabbi Yami al Shloshim Yom Mutar Lishoto. You can keep it around for 30 days. Mikan Ve'ela Chasur Lishoto. You can't keep it around anymore because of the concern that somebody may use it, not knowing that it hasn't been checked and that it is possibly invalid because of a mistake that may have crept into it, and so then you're not allowed to keep it around. And the reason for that is, again, like we've seen in the past, that one pasuk that we have on a page, pasuk from Iov, which is Al Tashken Bo'alacha Avla, don't keep a sinful thing in your house. Now back to the issue of Edim and testimony. Edim Shamru Amanah Yudvarenu. We've already talked about a Shtar Amanah. A Shtar Amanah is a Shtar that's written without a loan having been made, but on the assumption a loan is going to be made, and it's given to the potential lender, and the borrower trusts him. So let's say that there is a shtar that indicates a loan, and the witnesses come and say, "Yeah, we signed on it, but it was a shtar amana." Nachman says, "Ein nemanim." Moda hayu dvarei no. Shtar moda is an important piece. I put a little note in the introduction. It's a sugya that really belongs in Kiddushin and in Balbatra, but it's important to note here, which is that if somebody sells under duress, the next thing that they do, and the witnesses have helped him out because they don't want him to get hurt, they agree to sign. He agrees to the deal, but it's all under duress, at gunpoint, as it were. He then comes to Beit Din with another star, claiming that original star was done by Modah, and therefore the deal should not be good. Let's say Edim come and testify, yes, that is our signature, but we were testifying in a case of coercion, and therefore it was a modah. Ein nemanim, they're not believed, because the shtar stands by itself, and they cannot corrupt the shtar. Rabbi Rav Asher mar manah yudvarenu ein nemanim, modah yudvarenu nemanim. Parenthetically, Rabbi Rav Asher disagrees with Nachman about modah, because my time, hainin tam nikatei, v'hainon tam nikatei. With a shtar manah, you're allowed to write. Sorry, a shtar modah, you're allowed to write, and sometimes you have to write one. But a shtar amana, you're not allowed to write, and therefore their testimony, basically they're saying, we signed on to something that we weren't at all, it's not something that should be written at all. Good, now Bami Rav Rav Nachman. So Rav picks up the thread and asks Rav Nachman about a third case. What if they say, yes, we signed on to it, but there was an unwritten condition on the deal that perhaps has not yet been met, and so therefore the deal is torpedoed? In other words, we signed on to the fact that he bought the field from him. A bought the field from B. But besides that, A was supposed to fulfill some sort of condition before B would sell the field, and A hasn't yet fulfilled the condition. Right, so A claims the field's mine, B says, no, it's not, and we say, yeah, there was an unwritten sign. Mahu, what do we say? Modavi amana hainu taimayu. Rav Nachman said that both modai and amana are no good. Maybe the reason is to akrile the shtara, because what they're doing is they are uprooting the shtara. The shtara's implications are that the deal was done, and you claiming it's a modar or an amana says it should not be done. Vainamika akrile the shtara, and the same thing, if you come and say it's a tanai, you're also uprooting the shtara. Odilma tanai no tachritihi. Perhaps tanai is separate from the shtara, meaning you're saying the star is a good star. External to that, something else happened. So what's the deal? I'm Amaleki, out to the Kaman Medina, when I have such a case come before me, remember, Rav Nachman's a very big dayan, when I have such a case come before me, in other words, the star does not mention a condition, but the witnesses come and testify there was a condition, I tell them, Zilu kaimu tana'aychu, l'chutu l'dina. Go fulfill your condition, and then you can go collect your field. In other words, I accept what the witnesses say. So even though I don't accept it when they say modar or amana, I do accept it when they say tonight. Now, let's fine-tune this or tweak it. Ain't omer tonight, they don't omer ain't tonight. Two witnesses come and say, we sign. And one of them says there was a condition, the other guy says there wasn't. So now what do we have? It depends how integral the testimony about the tonight is to the entire testimony. We'll see. Amar papa, tovayu bishtar malya kamisadi. Papa says, look, very simple. The two of them I testifying that the shtar is good. And if following of Nachman's lead, the tanai is external to the shtar. The one guy who says it was a tanai is one guy. So his testimony of one cannot stand against the testimony of two, him and the other fellow, saying the shtar is good. And therefore, we assume the shtar, we don't assume the tanai, and all is well. So Papa's colleague says to him, so then, according to what you're saying, even if both of them said there was a tanai, we shouldn't believe them because they're essentially recanting on the testimony. And what you're saying is that when somebody says it's a tanai, they're saying the shtar is good, and now I'm uprooting the shtar by saying it's a tanai. Ela amrin and hanam demiakasad b'tayu ka'atu. Rav Huna ben Yehoshua sees this statement about it being a tanai as being much more integral, and he says that these two guys, if they come and say it was a tanai, are trying to uproot their original edut, which means we don't believe them. But now that means that when one guy comes and says, yes, it was that, I and the other fellow, we both agree that we signed on, but I say there was a tanai, what he's trying to really say is that my testimony about the shtar is not real. And therefore, what do you have? You have only one witness testifying it's a good shtar, which means the entire shtar is no good. As opposed to the way our Papa said it. And by the way, the Gemara says, that is indeed how we rule, that if the two come and say, yes, we signed on, and one of them says, but there was a tanai, then we attend to him because we say what he's basically saying is that his recanting his testimony or claiming that his testimony on the shtar is no good, and indeed, therefore, the shtar is not good. Tanu Rabbanan. Let's say I have a case that's similar to our Mishnah, but now we have other people testifying to the same thing. Two people were signed on a shtar, and then they died. And now the shtar, it's come time to fulfill the deal of the shtar. What are we going to do? These guys are dead. So two other guys show up and say, we know that that's their signature. We testify that that's their signature. Aval, anusim hayu, but we know that they were forced at the time. Tanim hayu, psulei dutayu. This is exactly like our Mishnah, except they're not saying about themselves, they're saying about the two guys who signed on. We believe them. You know, just like we believe the witnesses themselves, if they say, that's our signature, but we were anus. Similarly, when the only two guys who recognize them, which means these are the only guys who we can rely on to substantiate the shtar, also say, but we know that they signed under wrong circumstances, then we believe them and the shtar is invalid. But if there are witnesses that testify that it was the original witness's signature, it's an important line. Or if there is a substantiating signature of theirs, confirming signature of theirs, that comes from another shtar, from a shtar that was challenged and then confirmed in Beit Din, not just a shtar, a shtar that was challenged for some reason and was confirmed in Beit Din, then these two guys who come and say, yeah, we know that's their signature, but they were wrong witnesses at the time, we don't believe them because we already have their signatures properly substantiated, and we don't need these guys. Wait, time out. You're going to tell me that if we don't have external testimony, we just have these two fellows who come in and say, we recognize their signature, but we know that they were, in the second case, where there is other testimony that supports them, but these two guys come and say, we know that their signature is that's their signature, but they were anusim, we don't believe them, and when we use the shtar and we'll collect money based on it, we're going to go to somebody else's property and seize the property based on the shtar, you basically have two versus two. The two guys whose signatures are on the shtar, and these other two fellows are saying, we know that these guys were invalid witnesses. So it should be a double knockout. The shtar should be no good, and you shouldn't be able to use it to collect. So I'm Rav Sheshet. How do we answer this? Rav Sheshet says as follows. Zotamina, now there's an assumption here, and I'm pointing this out because you'll see soon that we have to check this assumption. There's an assumption when it says ne'amanim, that means that the shtar is 100% good and we can collect based on it. That's what we're challenging. So Sheshet says, indeed, that's the case. Zotomerat hachashat chilat hazamahi. I have to clarify these terms. Hachashah literally means repudiation or denial. Hazamah is a technical term that really can't be translated. Hachashat edim is when somebody testifies to something, and someone else comes and testifies to differently such that the first person's testimony is impossible. So, for instance, the first two witnesses, A and B, will come to court and say, Johnny stole this from the market. And the witnesses C and D come and say that, listen carefully, we were with Johnny at the time, he was in a different city, there's no way he could have stole from the market. Now you have conflicting testimony, it's two versus two, both testimonies are thrown out. If, on the other hand, you have hazama, which is when A and B say, we saw Johnny steal from the market, and C and D come and say, A and B, you were with us at the time, at the movies, how could you testify? That's hazama. No, good, so now Rav Sheshet says, Hachasha is really a beginning of the procedure of Hazama. They're related. They're not independent. And therefore, he says, Uchashem she'en zimina ta'idim elefem, just like you can't do Hazama without the Edim being there. We'll see this a little bit further down. Kachein machishim ta'idim elefem. Similarly, you can't do Hachasha unless they're there. What does that mean? Since the two witnesses that we're talking about are dead, they cannot be repudiated because they can't be there. They're dead. And therefore, we can't be machish them, and therefore we use the shtar that they're signed on to collect money, even though two other fellows are coming and saying, we know that they signed, but they signed as wrong witnesses. That's Rav Sheshet. So Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, I don't follow. Either halvu come on. Let's say the two witnesses were not dead. Let's say they were alive. Then according to what you're saying, these two fellows coming in and saying, you guys signed as wrong witnesses, that would be a valid hachasha. What's missing is they're not here. Then we wouldn't pay no attention to them because we would say your testimony has just been upended by the other two guys who say you were wrong witnesses. Now, that's if they were here. Even if they would challenge it and say, no, we were right witnesses, we would still throw them out. And now that they're not here, who says if they were here, maybe they'd admit it and they would say, yes, we were wrong witnesses. In other words, if they were here and they denied it, so we know that they claim that they were good witnesses, we still reject them. Now that they're not here, and if they were here, maybe they'd admit that they were wrong witnesses. Now you're going to still believe their testimony against two guys who are alive who are coming and saying they were wrong witnesses? Rav Nachman doesn't buy it. Allah Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman says, Oki tre lahadi tre v'oki mamona v'chezkat marei. You leave the two versus the two. It's a double knockout. The mamon stays where it is. In other words, Rav Nachman says, you read the statement wrong. It is not the case that if there's corroborating testimony, then we accept them and we use that shtar to collect, but rather we don't. And the money stays where it is and the shtar cannot be used. So for what purposes is the shtar valid? It's valid. We don't tear it up. We don't destroy it. And if there's later testimony that comes to corroborate it, then, or to be mazim the two guys who challenged it or whatever, then we'll keep it alive and we'll collect with it. But we're not going to collect yet. And just as the case, the famous case of Nichsid of Arshatya, who, as his name suggests, was something of an imbecile, a shota. The Arshatya Zovin Nichsid. Arshatya sold some land. Atu Beitrev Amikshu Shota Zovin. Two people came and said when he sold it, he was non-compos mentis. He was out of it. And two other witnesses came and said, no, when he sold it, he was lucid. So Amar Rav Asher, what was the ruling? Oki, Trey, Lahadi, Trey. These two conflicted the other two. We knocked them both out. For Oki, Mamona, Vachezkut, Barshatya. And the land stays with Barshatya. In other words, the sale doesn't happen. He sold land. Two say that he sold it validly. Two say the sale was invalid. The two knock each other out. There's no testimony here. And the land stays with him. The same way here, we do not collect based on the shtar, money stays where it is. Because we have two names written down that indicate it's good, we have two live people coming in and saying, we know those signatures, but they were wrong witnesses at the time, knock each other out, the money stays where it is. Now, parenthetically, about this case of Barshatya, this is only true in a case of this kind of problem where somebody only has occasional lucidity. If he has a chazaka davate, meaning the land that he sold is land that he got from his father, meaning the land that was in the family. Because now there's no question whatsoever that he originally owned the land properly. But lately, chazaka davate, but if he doesn't have that chazaka, amrina shusheta zavar or shushota zavin. He bought it when he was a shota, and he sold it when he was a shota. He has no chazaka. And therefore, we don't have the same strength, right? And And perhaps the that chazaka will not be enough to cancel out his sale. We do have two witnesses testifying that he sold it properly, and then the sale will go through. Good. I'm Rabbi Aval. This is an expansion on what we had earlier. We do not do hazama unless the witnesses are present. But hachasha can be done without the presence. This is clearly against Rav Sheshet, who tried to link the two together. And even if you do hazama, hazama is when you come and say, the two witnesses come and say to the two witnesses, you were with us at the time. Not, they're not testifying about the act or the accused. They're testifying about the witnesses. Even though if the edim that they're being mazim are not present and hazama can't get started, it still is a valid hachasha. So if two guys come and testify in Beit Din, Johnny killed Mikey, and they leave, and two other fellows come to Beit Din, according to Rabbi Val, two other guys come to Beit Din. When the first two witnesses are gone, and they say those witnesses were with us at the time, we can't start the process of hazama because they have to be there. But they are already muchash, and Johnny is, at least for the present time, being off the hook. Amar Mar, in Yeshayim Shektav Yadam Uzeh, this goes back to the bright at the end of the Amud Bet. We said if two guys come from, the two witnesses are dead and two other guys come and say, yeah, it's their signature, but they were anusim, we believe them, but if the signature is corroborated from an external source, we don't. And what did we say? That's the phrase. Now, it's only, and we're reading this carefully, it is only if their signature is found on a shtar that was challenged, ir'er, and was then substantiated in Beit Din. Without that, not. That supports Ravasi. Dam Ravasi ain't makarim the shtar el shtar shkral avir muzak beit din. The only way you substantiate one shtar is by comparing the signatures with another shtar. That's, of course, the witnesses aren't there. But comparing the signatures, two guys signed on a shtar, I bring the shtar saying Plony owes me money, and the witnesses are not around. How do we know these witnesses are real? We compare the signatures from another shtar, and Ravasi says the original, the model shtar, has to be one that was substantiated, that was challenged, and substantiated in Beit Din, and their signatures confirmed. Now, Amri Nahardei. Nahardei add to this. Nahardei, parenthetically, Nahardei was the town where Shmuel was the Beit Din, it was the rabbi of the town, and Nahardei was destroyed, and when it was destroyed, the students of Nahardei moved to Pumbadita, where Rav Yehuda, Shmuel's prized student, was the Rosh Hashiva, and they got their own row in the Beit Midrash, and that row was called the Nahardeian row. They said, "Ein mekanin tashtar el mishtek tubot or mishtei sadot." The only way you can substantiate signatures is if you can find them on two separate tubot or two separate bills of sale for a field. And by the way, the sale for the field has to be real confirmed. How? It has to be a field that subsequently the new owners have been on for 3 years. And they've been there, nobody's protested, b'shofi, there's been no challenge to them, meaning that we know that it's an absolutely good sale, and that tells us that the signatures that we're seeing are signatures of the valid witnesses, then we can use them to check the signatures on this new document. Now, over Amar Shim Barashi, we had said, we talk at Yad Acher. He put another caveat in. He said, it's only if the other two documents are brought to the court by somebody else. But if I'm the guy who's trying to get this shtar substantiated, and I bring several other documents that have the same witnesses' names on it, then I'm not believed. Why? Because we're concerned that maybe I learned how to forge them. I have two documents that those guys really signed, and then I forged their signatures onto this other document that I made up. That's the concern. So the substantiation has to come from other sources. Even if somebody else has the shtar, maybe I was at his house and he showed me the shtar and I was able to forge. The answer is it's very hard to really properly forge a signature based on something that you saw for a few minutes. You have it in the privacy of your home. You can spend all the time you want comfortably learning how to forge it. That's a different story. So we're not here raising the issue of credibility. We don't have the credibility. And not saying the credibility is indifferent. We're just saying that functionally it's much harder to properly forge a signature unless you have more time with the document. Tan Rabbanan. This now is an issue of jogging your memory by keeping notes. Kotev Adam Eduto al Ashtar. Shtar here is not a star. Like Rashi points out, you take a piece of paper and you write a note. And you see something happen, you can write down the details of it. If you ever are driving and you see a police car pulled off to the side and you see a very displeased driver in front of him pulling away, he's just gotten a ticket, you see invariably the policeman is sitting there taking notes in a little pad. He's taking notes because on the possibility that the driver is going to come and contest the ticket, he wants to remember the driver was this time of day, and the driver was in this kind of mood, and it was this kind of car, and it was going this fast, and all of the details, so he could testify properly in court. So you're allowed to do that. You're allowed to write these notes. And you can even a few years later pull out the note and testify, this is what happened. In other words, you forgot, but you got the information there. But it's not so clear that you forgot. We'll see. Avuna says it's only if you remember the essential issue by itself. I remember that I saw a robbery a few years ago, and I know that it was somewhere in this location, and then you pull out the notes to remember the details. But you have to remember the essential thing. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even if you have no memory of it, you just check your notes and you see, oh yeah, yeah, and you can testify, that's good enough. So I'm a rabbi, Shraman of Yochanan, so he infers from Yochanan, Hani betray the Yadi Saduto, Man Shichad Minayev, two guys remembered to have testimony, and one of them forgot it, one guy can remind the other guy. Because after all, according to Yochanan, you can use memory joggers even if you have no memory of the testimony at all. So whether I, your fellow witness, remind you, or your notes remind you, it should be okay. And that's fine. Now, Ibayalahu, Atzma Mai. What if the litigant reminds you? Not your fellow test witness. But if I come up to you and say, don't you remember you testified for me that he owes me money? You saw that he owes me money? Come to court? Can I remind you? He says, yeah, that's good too. He says, no, Atzmolo, if the litigant is the one who comes to remind you, it's not good. That's the halacha. But with a caveat, but if the witness is a Talmid Chacham, even if the litigant reminds him, then it's good. Why? Because the Talmid Chacham is aware of the tremendous penalties and the tremendous stakes of testifying wrongly. And he'll make sure that he's not just doing it because the guy is sort of leading him on, but that he really does remember the testimony properly. Okay, Hadra Vashi, here we hear a story to substantiate this. Hadra Vashi, have a Yediyale the Saduta the Rav Kahana. Right? Ravashi knew some testimony that would help Rav Kahana. Yeah, it was about it, whether it was about a loan or a debt, whatever. Amrale, Midachar Mar Hai Saduta. Rav Kahana said, don't you remember that testimony? Amrale, lo. He said, no. Balav hachi v'hachi havei. So Rav Kahana said, wasn't it like this? And he described it. Amrale, lo yadana. Ravashi said, I don't remember. And so vid Kravashi, a little while later on his own, Ravashi then remembered. Asile came to court and testified for him. Chazi Rav Kahana, davi michsim. So Rav Kahana was silent. He was upset. He was stuttering. Because he felt bad. How can Ravashi testify now that I really let him on? Amrale, misara talach kasamichta. So he said to Rav Kahana, you think I'm relying on you? I fooled myself. I made myself forget the Idkari, and now I remembered. So, in other words, I'm not doing because you. I'm not repeating what you told me. You jogged my memory. I took a little time, and I remembered. Good. Now, this will be something that is very much in a different direction, but it will lead us back home just before we get to the Mishnah. Tranatam. This is a Mishnah, and all otak krovot. You have little hillocks that are nearby. Nearby what? We'll see. Bein la ir, bein la derech, whether they're near the city or near the interurban road. We'll see what that means. Echad chadashot v'echad yishanot, whether these hillocks are recent mounds that were built or old mounds. Tmeot, yotame. Why? Because sometimes people, it's at night, whatever it is, they'll bury, they're dead there, and so we assume that it's built up because of the grave. Harechokot, but the ones that are far away from the road or the city, Charashot Torot, if they're new mounds, then they're Tahor. We'll see why. Hayishanot Tmeot, if they're old, then they're Tameh. What's the notion? The notion is that if they're new, everybody would remember if somebody was buried there. And if they don't remember, then we assume that that was for some other reason. But if it's old, we would have forgotten. Now, Ezri Krova, what's the definition of close? Chamishim Ama, within 50 Amot of the road or the city. Ezri Yishana, how old is old? Shishim Shana, do you remember? Mayor says 60 years old. Avir Omer, he says, disagrees. Krovash and Krovai Mena. Krovah means it's the closest. Yishana means She'en Adam Zochra. It's so old, nobody remembers why it's there. You know, you have a little hill, you have a little marker or something, and nobody remembers why it's there. Ma'ir, my derech. Now, what is a city and what's a derech in that Mishnah? Ilei ma'ir, ir mamash, derech, derech mamash, if it's really the city and the road, misfeka mimachaz kinem tumah, since when do we say, if we don't know what's there, we claim it's tamei? Ashlokish, ilam atzum atir, where it's Israel. They found a way to be matayr all of Eretz Israel, to claim that, this is in Sugya Nazir, that we don't, in any particular direction, we don't know that there's a grave there, which means that misfeka, we're not maxi patuma. Okay? So therefore, so it can't be the road and the path, the regular road and the regular city. Amavzera, ir means iras v'chalavet akrot. It's a city that's right near the cemetery. The derach means derach beit akrot, the road to the cemetery. So it means any hillocks that are right with, close to the city that's right next to the cemetery, or close to the road that goes to the cemetery, those are the ones. Why? Because sometimes somebody will be on their way, but it's that night, they're afraid to go, they're burying somebody that they're embarrassed about, like a woman miscarried, that sort of thing, they'll bury it very close by on the way. Now, I understand the road to the Beit HaKvarot is even to be trying to banish Mashot. Sometimes it'll be Friday afternoon, it's almost Shabbos, they're trying to bury somebody. Umakri Kivro Batel. So what they do is they quickly bury him in the tel. Why would a city that's right near the Beit HaKvarot put a Beit HaKvarot as there? He goes to the Beit HaKvarot. Why would you think that a hillock that's nearby has a dead corpse in it? Because women who miscarry feel bad about it, so they go there quietly, alone. They're not going to go, and they go at night, they're not going to go too far out of town, all the way to the Beit HaKvarot. And people who are diseased and who lose body parts bury them there also. A woman's going to go at 50 amot and no further at night alone. Any further, she's going to take some man with her. She'll go all the way to the cemetery and bury. That's why we don't claim that there's tumah in every little corner in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the whole point of this exercise was for one thing. What did Rameir say? How old is old as far as people's memory goes? 60 years. As far as testimony goes, people remember it for 60 years. People don't remember it any later than that. Velohi, and we reject this whole exercise was to try to prove that 60 years, at least according to Meir, would be the limit on remembering testimony, and we reject that. Why? With the hillocks, it's not my job to remember what's in there. I'll have to remember. For 60 years, people remember. But when I testify to something, I always remember it. I feel the tuvan on me. I could remember it much, much longer, which is going to lead us to some sukiyot in the later part of the parak, not immediately, later part of the parak, about testifying to things when you are older, about things that you saw even when you were a kid, or when you were younger, and how that works. All right, everybody should have a wonderful day, and Yitzhak Shemuel will pick up in the next podcast with Mishnah Dalad, Adaf Chaf, and Mubet.